the very last wig. It's a solemn moment. Loose Wig 9, Side 4, is about to begin and soon to conclude.
Thank you. Them blues. That's a wonderful one. I'd like to have a dollar for every trumpet player that's goofed copying Louis' intro. That's a formidable beginning, Anita. The notes aren't that complex. What makes it hard is he starts on a very high note, and the rhythm. Louis was very strong on rhythm, and the way he breaks up the phrases, it's very awkward to try to copy it.
Capturing for all time the purity of Armstrong's sound and his impetuous spirit.
G.I. visited Picasso in Paris during the war and said, "I can't understand your paintings. They're absurd. Life doesn't look like that." Picasso said, "Do you have a girlfriend?" He said, "Yes." "Have you a picture?" He said, "Yes. Show it." So he drew out his billfold, and there was a little colored photograph of his girlfriend, and Picasso looked at it and said, "Is she so small as that?"
As a truly free man who could make offensive material serve his own ends, he became a hero to the black community.
Oh, Johnny, drop this mean girl. My hair is burning just because my teeth are burning. Oh, just because I always make a smile. I like the dresser in the lady darling. Just because I'm glad I'm living. Oh, I take all my troubles, all with a smile. Just because my color shades make a difference. That's why they call me shy.
It's a matter of mistaken identity. You know, we had a lot of tunes that we played that we didn't have any names for. So when we start off the tune, all out there, you know, something like that. You know, just for the introduction to the song. And then everybody knows what we're going to play, and then we play. But the people thought I was giving the title of a tune or something. So they say, "You know that thing?" Then they come and ask for it. You know that tune goes dee-dop, ba-dee-bop, bee-bop, jazz, you know, and it's developing that, and the media went for it.
I think that bebop is an unfortunate name that came across from musicians who were just trying to talk smart to the public. I'm sure that jazz is another one. You know, when somebody asks you, what do you call this music? Well, you haven't thought about naming it if you're a true musician. You're just playing to your best ability. And some people in the public always want to name things. And I'm sure it's some musician, maybe Louis Armstrong, somebody said, what do you call this music, Louis? He's probably just, oh, that's some jazz, man, you know. And he wasn't serious, or whomever, like Dizzy, I probably said, ah, bebop, you know. I don't think that it was a serious, he was seriously trying to name the music.
Bebop was rhythmically quite different from all the music which preceded it. And Gillespie's role in its development went well beyond what he brought to his trumpet part. Drummer Kenny Washington illustrates the evolution of bebop drumming.
Before Dizzy, most of the drummers actually played in big bands. See, so they had to play strong, and like they was very much into using the bass drum, a heavy 4/4. Actually, they didn't even use the ride cymbal. They would use like the hi-hat. The bass drum was dominant. And the real pre-bebopper was Joe Jones. You have to give Joe Jones credit because he started lightening up the sound with Count Basie's band. They came up with a whole lighter sound, which was great for dancers. Well, see, what would happen is the bass drum was felt more so than heard. So then they started calling that feathering. Also, Joe Jones is also responsible for dropping bombs. In other words, so he's actually the cat that really started what they call breaking up the beat or dropping bombs. Kenny Clarke and Max Roach started utilizing some of the ideas that they heard on some of those early broadcasts of Joe's, but they took it to the next level. So what Max would do, Max would play the same figure, and he would do things like this. So then what happened was the bass drum became an accent point. When Dizzy and Bird came on the scene, the music became a lot more complex in terms of playing in different keys. Chord progressions became harder, but the rhythm was mean when those guys came along. It came up with a whole set of different problems that needed to be solved. So Dizzy would talk to Kenny Clarke about some of the things that he was trying to do. And so Kenny Clarke, being open-minded as he was, as well as Max, Dizzy a lot of times would tell, you know, sing the rhythms for them or write the rhythms out, and they would think about these different things and they would come up with these different ideas. One of the things that Max is a master of is tempos. Like he would play things like this. So he would add his left hand in as punctuations. That's one of Dizzy's rhythms, man.
Stop, pin up. salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts.
Salt Peanuts, written by Dizzy Gillespie and Kenny Clark, and performed by Gillespie, trumpet, Don Byas, tenor saxophone, Trummy Young, trombone, Clyde Hart, piano, Oscar Pettiford, bass, and Shelly Mann, drums. Recorded.
Again, somehow talking about the Three Stooges. Supposing the Three Stooges were real. So I saw them spring into being at the sight of Neil in the street right there in front of the station. Curly, Moe, and Larry. That's his name, Larry. Moe, the leader. Mopish, Mowbray, Mope-mouthed, Mealy, Mad, Hanking, making the others quake, whacking Curly on the iron pate, backhanding Larry, who wonders, picking up a sledgehammer, honk, and ramming it down nozzle first on the flat pan of Curly's skull, boing, and all big dumb convict Curly does is muckle and yuckle and squeal, pressing his lips, shaking his old butt like jelly, nodding his jello fists, eyeing Moe, who looks back and at him, eyeing Moe, who looks back at him and with that lowered and surly. Well, what are you going to do about it? On the thunderstorm eyebrows like the eyebrows of Beethoven. Completely ironbound in surls. Larry, in his angelic, or rather, he really looks like he conned the other two, let him join the group. So they had to pay him all these years a regular share of the salary to them who worked so hard with the props. Larry, goof-haired, mopple-lipped, lisped, muxed, and completely flunk, trips over a pail of whitewash and falls face first in a 7-inch nail that remains embedded in his eye bone. The eye bones connect to the shadow bone. Shadow bones connect to the luck bone. Luck bones connect to the foul bone. Foul bones connect to the high bone. High bones connect to the air bone. Air bones connect to the sky bone. Sky bones connect to the angel bone. Angel bones connect to the god bone. God bones connect to the bone bone. Moe yanks it out of his eye, impales him with an 8-foot steel rod. It gets worse and worse. It started on an innocent thumbing, which led to backhand, then the pastries, then the nose yanks, blap, bloop, going, going, gong. And I was in a sticky dream set in syrup universe. They do muckle and moan and pull and mop about, like I told you, in an underground hell of their own invention. They are involved and alive. They go haggling down the street at each other's hair, socking, remonstrating, falling, getting up, flailing as the red sun sails. So, supposing the Three Stooges were real. And like Neil and me, we're going to work, only they forgot about that, and tragically mistaken and inter-allied, began pasting and cuffing each other at the employment office desk as clerks stare. Supposing in real gray day, and not the gray day of movies and all those afternoons we spent looking at them in hooky or officially on Sundays among the thousand crackling children of peanuts and candy in the dark show and the Three Stooges, as in that golden dream B-movie of mine around the corner from the Strand, are providing scenes for wild vibrating hysterias as great as the hysterias of hipsters at jazz at the Philharmonics. Supposing in real gray day you saw them coming down 7th Street looking for jobs as ushers, insurance salesmen, that way. Then I saw the Three Stooges materialize on a sidewalk, their hair blowing in the wind of things. And Neil was with them, laughing and staggering in savage mimicry of them, and himself staggering and gooped, but they didn't notice. I followed him back. It was an afternoon when I found myself hung up in a strange city. Maybe after hitchhiking and escaping something, half tears in my eyes, 19 or 20, worrying about my folks and killing time with a B-movie, or any movie, and suddenly the Three Stooges appeared, just the name, goofing on the screen. And in the streets, they're the same streets as outside the theater, only they are photographed in Hollywood by serious crews like Joan Crawford in The Fog. And the Three Stooges were bopping one another, until, as Neil says, they've been at it for so many years, and a thousand and climactic efforts, super climbing, and worked out every refinement of bopping one another, so much that now, in the end, if it isn't already over, in the Baroque period of the Three Stooges, they are finally bopping mechanically, and sometimes so hard it is impossible to bear, wince. But by now they've learned not only how to master the style of the blows, but the symbol and acceptance of them also, as though inured in their souls, and of course long ago in their bodies, to buffetings and crashings in the ricksy gloom of 30s movies and B-short subjects of that cracked kind that made me yawn at 10 a.m. in my hooky movie of high school days. Intent I was on saving my energy for serious jawed features, which in my time was the cleft jaw of Gary Grant. Stooges don't feel the blows anymore. Moe is iron. Curly's dead. Larry's gone. Off the rocker. Beyond hell and gone. So ably hidden by his uncombable mop, in which, as G.J. used to say, he hit a derringer pistol. So there they are. Bonk, boing, and there's Neil following after them, stumbling and saying, "Hey, look out, hook!" On Larimer or Main Street or Times Square in the mist as they parade erratically like crazy kids past the shoeboxes of simpletons and candy corn arcades. And seriously, Neil talking about him, telling me at the creamy station, under palms or suggestions thereof, his huge rosy face bent over the time and the thing like a sun in the great day. So then I knew that long ago, when the mist was raw, Neil saw the Three Stooges. Maybe he just stood outside a pawn shop or hardware store or in that perennial pool hall door, but maybe more likely on the pavings of the city under tragic rainy telephone poles, and thought of the Three Stooges, suddenly realizing that life is strange and the Three Stooges do exist, that in 10,000 years that all the goofs he felt in him were justified in the outside world and he had nothing to reproach himself for. Bonk, boing, crash, skiddly boom, pow slam, bang, boom, wham, blam, crack, frap, kerplunk, clatter, clap, blap, flap, slap, map, splat, crunch, crouch, bong, splat, splat, bong.
Valtorini, Max Gooty, Valtorini, Max Gooty, Valtorini, Max Gooty. Valtorini, Max Gooty, Valtorini, Max Gooty, Valtorini, Max Gooty.
Baby, well, old Jamaican, then you're if and you know this fly. You zip that brown, you know this sire. This is that favorite dip.
Valtorini, Max Gooty, Valtorini, Max Gooty, Valtorini, Max Gooty.
We'll be right back. a little clean sound. I need a little air freshener under the drums. Open up the window, y'all. Let out some two folk in here. In a hole and nothing back. Whole band knows that they'll get down. Air's polluted with a funky, funky sound. I said again, yeah, yeah, yeah. Do the funky, yeah. Say it again. I can't hear ya. Open the door, huh?
That's all, folks.